To add to the complications, I was supposed to have died when a baby. I was declared dead, and lay dead many hours on my mother's lap, for she could not be persuaded to lay me down. And then, at dawn, I revived, but the eyes that looked up at my mother, she told me many years afterwards when I asked her the cause of my strangeness, were not the eyes of a child, and she knew with the unerring instinct of a mother that I was not the same one. I was never young, even in those days, I had the same mind that I have now, but with the emotional outlook of a child. With such a mind I could never be a child with children, and the adults of that day were a hostile race. Moreover, we were gentle people who had become poor, and we saw at its worst the workings of the class system of the time. So although I was a friendly child, eager for play and companionship, I was forced back on myself and compelled to solitude. This I believe to be the prerequisite for that which was to follow, for it is only by turning within that we can find the inner path, and those whose fate destines them for that path are prevented from turning outward and finding their place in life, just as the feet of the Chinese child are bound. It is a painful process at the time, but the result is a personality that can be used for the purpose for which it is designed, being free from attachments and inured to solitude. Such, I believe, is the law of the higher path, for I have many times watched it at work. To those who are accustomed to find happiness in their attachments and can conceive of no other kind, it may appear a melancholy lot, but once the fact of detachment has been accepted, life opens up in the most marvelous manner. Only one must be very careful never to form ties, for they invariably have to be broken. Yet, by a strange paradox, one has an extraordinary richness of experience, for one may enjoy anything as long as one does not become dependent on it. It is an old saying that an initiate possesses nothing but has the use of everything. Wilfred Maxwell has told the story of my beginnings, and how I found the inner path, so there is no need for me to tell it again. He has also told of the experiment we worked together, but what he has not told, for he could not know, was the way in which that experiment appeared to me. That I will now tell as briefly as may be, for it is the prelude to what is to follow. I had traveled some distance down the inner path, and had developed my psychism to the point where it was as reliable as psychism is ever likely to be. That is to say, I could trust it in matters in which I had no personal concern. I was also well acquainted with the theory and philosophy of the secret teaching as it has come down to us by tradition. But there is a big difference between the psychic and the adept, for the psychic is a psychic and nothing more, but the adept, to be worthy of the name, must be not only a psychic but a magician. That is to say, he must be able to wield the powers of the spirit objectively as well as subjectively. When I met Wilfred Maxwell, I was what is called an adeptus minor, and I had not made that transition. I used Wilfred's faith in me to establish my own confidence in my magical powers, for if one believes in them, one can use them, and if one does not believe in them, one cannot use them, and a skeptical, rational person like myself does not find it easy to believe in such things until they have been put to the test and found to work, and, paradoxically, they will not work unless one believes in them, for one is all the time receiving negative suggestion from one's own incredulity, and by the same token, breaking up the astral forms as fast as one makes them. But when I made Wilfred, who had faith, see an astral form by means of suggestion, his faith held it steady for me to see. This is a subtle but useful point in the practical workings, and I offer it to those who can appreciate it. There are not many people who know these things, or, if they know them, will tell them. I made Wilfred see me as I wanted to be, and by this means I built up my magical personality. A magical personality is a strange thing. It is more like a familiar than anything else, and one transfers one's consciousness to it as one does to an astral projection, until finally one identifies oneself with it and becomes that which one has built. Then, having used Wilfred, I left him, but not until I had put him in touch with the cosmic forces. I remember coming into London at the peak hour of the traffic. I came in by an unfamiliar route and lost my way in the great tangled boroughs of the Surrey side, where all the streets look alike but are pushed askew by the windings of the river, and one loses all sense of direction. The only landmark I had was the great chimney of Dolden's factory, which I knew would guide me to the bridge I wanted, but the twisted streets would not run as I wished, for that part of the world is a mass of cul-de-sac owing to the railway. Suddenly I saw ahead of me at the end of a street the leaden grey surface of the river. Thinking that this would be the Albert Embankment, and known country, I made for it only to find myself in the oddest little forgotten village in the world, looking across the water at the ragged skyline of the mean streets of Pimlico. It was not a slum but, in fact, intensely respectable. Every little house had a little front garden, and without exception they all had lace curtains to their windows. A number of the gates bore brass plates to the effect that sweeps, undertakers, midwives, and such like folk lived there. It proved to be another cul-de-sac, however, and I had to turn perilously on a tumble-down wharf at its end, and retrace my route to the right-angle turn. In that angle stood a small and dismal church, black as a London cat with accumulated grime, its upper windows protected from stone throwing by closely woven wire screens, its lower ones by heavy, wrought iron grills, its door a massive oak affair studded with great nails. It looked, in fact, like a miniature private fortress disguised under the cloak of religion. I have never seen a more forbidding fortification. It might have been a prison of the Inquisition. To complete the picture of neglected gloom, a tillet board drooped in front of it. This surprised me, for I had believed that once a church, always a church, and that ecclesiastical property could not be sequestrated. But this church had apparently been too much even for the ecclesiastical authorities, and they wished to be rid of it. It looked to me as if it might be very badly haunted. I got across the river at last, and found myself in civilized parts once more. I was glad to be back, and my little home in the hayloft looked very welcoming, with its huge fire and deep divans piled with innumerable cushions, and all the soft, rich, dark colors that I love. The flat seemed strangely alien, although I had only been absent a few months. I could tell that my life had already withdrawn from it and that I should not be pulling up any roots when I left there. But that did not make me any happier, but rather the contrary, for I felt alien and alone and homeless, and atmospheres have always meant a great deal to me. They have meant, perhaps, more than persons, owing to the law of aloneness under which I live. I was glad, on the whole, that the atmosphere of the flat was dead, for I had been dreading the parting, fearing that I would feel as if I were abandoning some humble friend by whose help I had climbed, for this was the first settled home I had ever known. But it does not do to be sentimental over either places or persons upon the path. The days of my training were finished, and I was changing over from the lesser to the greater mysteries. What I had learned I now had to put into practice. The law by which I live is so strange that unless I tell something of it, no one will understand what follows. Many tales have been woven round the theme of the black-cloaked adept with mysterious powers, appearing from nowhere in response to some call for help, and disappearing equally mysteriously after help has been given, but no one, not even Bulwer Lytton, who could have done so, has told the story from the adept's point of view, showing why he came and why he went and what he really did. This, then, is what manner of person an adept is. There are those who are concerned with the inner governance of the world, not its politics and wire pullings, but with the secret spiritual influences that rule the minds of men. Behind them are those greater than they, who are concerned with elemental forces and the influences that rule the eight-tilde broken bar on. These are to those others as the tides are to the breaking waves. Then, upon the physical plane, are those who are sent through into incarnation to cooperate with them. They are sometimes spoken of as initiates, and they are that, but also something more than that. They must, of course, be initiated into the tradition, otherwise they would not have the keys to the contacts and would not command cooperation. There are, of course, also initiates who become adepts, but I am speaking now of what are called the cosmic adepts, and they come in for a purpose, and all their time until maturity is given to preparing the personality as an instrument for that purpose. It would be a cruel training if there were not within one an inner awareness which knows whence one comes, and why, as I had known, even as a child, that I was a stranger and a sojourner and did not belong. Therefore things do not hurt as they would hurt others. But one is always alone, for there are very few with whom to find companionship, and because one is strange, one is hated. Then there comes the time when the transition must be made from one mode of consciousness to the other, when we learn to use the instrument we have wrought for the purpose for which it has been designed, and that instrument is our own human personality. It is a strange thing to stand back from one's personality and use it, and not easy to do. Those of us who come in thus have been trained and made in a previous life, and I have always been a priestess of the Great Mother. Such male incarnations as I have had, have been negligible, and mostly violent and unhappy. But a priestess I have been, and a great one, right down from the days of Atlantis, for the higher the grade, the earlier the initiation, and I was one of those who served in the courts of the great Sun Temple of the City of the Golden Gates in the island of Ruta. It was I who was sent away before the end, when they were taking out the seed bearers for the next epoch, and I saw from the sea great Atlantis go down in the last final catastrophe that ended all. Then my soul became affiliated to the group soul of Egypt and I came in and out through the doors of the royal house down through all the Egyptian dynasties. I was never of those that sat upon the throne, but I was a mysterious figure that came and went in the background of the temples. I was of the cult of the Black Isis, which is very different from that of the green-robed goddess of nature to whom the women prayed for children. They represent her with a human face, or horned like a cow, but the Black Isis is the veiled Isis, upon whose face none may look and live, and because I represent her, I too went veiled and cloaked, and I have never lost the habit to this day. I do not like people to look upon my face in bright light, and if I must show it, I show it masked in laughter and animation. Very few have ever seen my face in repose, for repose is a transparent mask. Some equate the Black Isis with Kali, and say that she is evil, but I do not think she is, unless one counts elemental force as evil, which I do not. She is indeed the breaker in pieces, but then she sets free. She is also most ancient life, and people fear the primordial as they fear nothing else. Freud knew that. She is a reservoir of tremendous and dynamic force, and when dynamic force comes welling up, that is she. I broke Wilfrid, and he rose like a phoenix, reborn from the ashes of his dead life, and knew great Isis. I slew him and I gave him birth. That is not evil, unless you reckon pain as evil, and I do not, for pain brings power, and destruction is freedom. I do not think there is any such thing as innate evil. What men call evil is simply misplaced force. Some define good as that which preserves, and evil as that which destroys. But destruction can be cleansing and purifying, for there is such a thing in both men and races as spiritual constipation, which comes from too much preservation of the status quo. So I came back to the world yet once again as the priestess of the great goddess, bringing with me the memory of forgotten arts, one of which is the art of being a woman. I came because I was sent. There was that needed which I had to give. They did not send in a priestess of the bright Isis, but of the dark and veiled one, because that was the need, and they said to me, "Ao, you will have tiger teeth, for you will be a breaker in pieces. Men will call you the priestess of all evil, but you know better." So I came in at the dawn of a new broken bar on. There were those who had gone before me who watched over the breakup of the old world. They had been armed and mailed, great sworded ones, but I was unarmed save for the weapons of a woman. I had only my woman's personality with which to work, and I had to create and build it as if it were a work of art, and I worked on myself like a sculptress. It was an odd sensation to feel the two aspects of myself merging, and finally uniting. In the earlier stages I would be either in one consciousness or the other. I would slip into the wider consciousness, returning on waking, but able to bring through no more than faint shadowy memories of dreams. Twice, in crises that might have destroyed the physical personality I was so laboriously building, I united my two selves momentarily, but the child mind could not stand more than a brief uniting. Life was difficult enough as it was. With adolescence everything closed down, for no mind could stand the double strain. Then, when I stabilized with maturity, it began to open again and I was conscious of an overshadowing, for by this time the focus of my being had been fully transferred to the physical body. Familiar with the language of spiritualism, I thought of this overshadowing as a spirit control, but gradually I became aware that it was simply my own higher self, and still more gradually I learned to rely on it. My two selves have never been permanently in me, for no human physique would stand that, nor can I invoke my higher self at will, but I know how to make the conditions that cause it to come in. Unfortunately, that is a thing in which I always need to have help. I cannot do it single-handed. Someone has to see the goddess in me, and then she manifests. I am not the goddess, but I am the priestess of the goddess, and she manifests through me, for all women are Isis. Not many can see the goddess manifest, and of those that can see, not all can bear it, and then they hate me because they fear her. I have been much hated in my life, and I have, likewise, had more than my fair share of love. As I have already said, Wilfred gave me the help I needed in formulating myself to myself. My weapons were now ready, and the next phase of my career lay with the world. I had already passed the age when a woman can hope to charm by her looks, but the forces that came through me had miraculously recreated me, and I lived with a strange inner vitality that was ageless and deathless and timeless. I was neither young nor old, neither a young girl nor a mature woman. People knew I was not young, and yet they could not think of me as old. I was simply alive with a vitality that prevented people from seeing me as I really was, that glamoured them into seeing me as the ageless and deathless priestess of great Isis. I knew, moreover, how to set myself against an appropriate background, and when I chose I could wrap my aura about me and pass unseen as a shadow. People sneered at my backgrounds as theatrical and called me a poseuse, but I knew that those of us who come in thus have been trained and made in a previous life, and I have always been a priestess of the Great Mother. Such male incarnations as I have had, have been negligible, and mostly violent and unhappy. But a priestess I have been, and a great one, right down from the days of Atlantis, for the higher the grade, the earlier the initiation. And I was one of those who served in the courts of the Great Sun Temple of the City of the Golden Gates in the island of Ruta. It was I who was sent away before the end, when they were taking out the seed bearers for the next epoch, and I saw from the sea Great Atlantis go down in the last final catastrophe that ended all. Then my soul became affiliated to the group soul of Egypt and I came in and out through the doors of the royal house down through all the Egyptian dynasties. I was never of those that sat upon the throne, but I was a mysterious figure that came and went in the background of the temples. I was of the cult of the Black Isis, which is very different from that of the green-robed goddess of nature to whom the women prayed for children. They represent her with a human face, or horned like a cow, but the Black Isis is the veiled Isis, upon whose face none may look and live, and because I represent her, I too went veiled and cloaked, and I have never lost the habit to this day. I do not like people to look upon my face in bright light, and if I must show it, I show it masked in laughter and animation. Very few have ever seen my face in repose, for repose is a transparent mask. Some equate the Black Isis with Kali, and say that she is evil, but I do not think she is, unless one counts elemental force as evil, which I do not. She is indeed the breaker in pieces, but then she sets free. She is also most ancient life, and people fear the primordial as they fear nothing else. Freud knew that, she is a reservoir of tremendous and dynamic force, and when dynamic force comes welling up, that is she. I broke Wilfred, and he rose like a phoenix, reborn from the ashes of his dead life, and knew great Isis. I slew him and I gave him birth. That is not evil, unless you reckon pain as evil, and I do not, for pain brings power, and destruction is freedom. I do not think there is any such thing as innate evil. What men call evil is simply misplaced force. Some define good as that which preserves, and evil as that which destroys. But destruction can be cleansing and purifying, for there is such a thing in both men and races as spiritual constipation, which comes from too much preservation of the status quo. So I came back to the world yet once again as the priestess of the great goddess, bringing with me the memory of forgotten arts, one of which is the art of being a woman. I came because I was sent. There was that needed which I had to give. They did not send in a priestess of the bright Isis, but of the dark and veiled one, because that was the need, and they said to me, "You will have tiger teeth, for you will be a breaker in pieces. Men will call you the priestess of all evil, but you know better." So I came in at the dawn of a new a broken Baron. There were those who had gone before me who watched over the breakup of the old world. They had been armed and mailed, great sworded ones, but I was unarmed save for the weapons of a woman. I had only my woman's personality with which to work, and I had to create and build it as if it were a work of art, and I worked on myself like a sculptress. It was an odd sensation to feel the two aspects of myself merging, and finally uniting. In the earlier stages I would be either in one consciousness or the other. I would slip into the wider consciousness, returning on waking, but able to bring through no more than faint shadowy memories of dreams. Twice, in crises that might have destroyed the physical personality I was so laboriously building, I united my two selves momentarily, but the child mind could not stand more than a brief uniting. Life was difficult enough as it was. With adolescence everything closed down, for no mind could stand the double strain. Then, when I stabilized with maturity, it began to open again and I was conscious of an overshadowing, for by this time the focus of my being had been fully transferred to the physical body. Familiar with the language of spiritualism, I thought of this overshadowing as a spirit control, but gradually I became aware that it was simply my own higher self. And still more gradually I learnt to rely on it. My two selves have never been permanently in me, for no human physique would stand that, nor can I invoke my higher self at will, but I know how to make the conditions that cause it to come in. Unfortunately, that is a thing in which I always need to have help. I cannot do it single-handed. Someone has to see the goddess in me, and then she manifests. I am not the goddess, but I am the priestess of the goddess. And she manifests through me, for all women are Isis. Not many can see the goddess manifest, and of those that can see, not all can bear it, and then they hate me because they fear her. I have been much hated in my life, and I have, likewise, had more than my fair share of love. As I have already said, Wilfred gave me the help I needed in formulating myself to myself. My weapons were now ready. And the next phase of my career lay with the world. I had already passed the age when a woman can hope to charm by her looks, but the forces that came through me had miraculously recreated me, and I lived with a strange inner vitality that was ageless and deathless and timeless. I was neither young nor old, neither a young girl nor a mature woman. People knew I was not young, and yet they could not think of me as old. I was simply alive with a vitality that prevented people from seeing me as I really was, that glamoured them into seeing me as the ageless and deathless priestess of great Isis. I knew, moreover, how to set myself against an appropriate background, and when I chose I could wrap my aura about me and pass unseen as a shadow. People sneered at my backgrounds as theatrical and called me a poseuse, but I knew that my backgrounds were psychological and my pose an auto-suggestion. It was my task to bring certain new concepts to the mind of the race, not to its conscious mind, but to its subconscious mind, and this is done by living them. One who had knowledge once said that an adept must not merely tread the path, he must be the path, and this is true. It was not my task to lecture or write or appear in the public eye as is done by those who speak to the conscious mind of the race. But for the carrying out of my work I required a certain amount of cooperation. Like King Solomon, I required men and materials. The necessary money had been placed in my hands, and I could always invoke for more if I wanted it, But that in itself was not enough. Mere wealth would not create of its own accord, and the kind of background I needed was not one that could be entrusted to a professional designer. Moreover, I needed cooperation, and that was even less easy to procure. I needed people with gifts, but they must also have a sense of dedication. I needed people with minds, but pure intellect would not do, they must also have something of the artist in them. I needed above everything, people with that curious gift of magnetism whom I could use, and I needed, lastly, people on whom I could experiment. But it is not easy to get people to let themselves be used. Little do they know how Isis pays, and I might not tell them. For this is one of the tests of the path, that they shall not bargain. You will remember that a certain man gave all he had to buy the pearl of great price. They give to Isis and she gives to them, but they give as men, and she gives as a goddess. Onlookers see the sacrifice that is laid on the altar in open temple, but they do not see the initiation that takes place behind the veil. They see the candidate go down into the grave, they do not see the resurrection on the third day. All they ever know of what occurs is what they learn from those whose courage fails and who turn back, and are they the best judges? I knew that all I needed would be provided, and that I could draw it through into manifestation just in proportion as I had faith. Those who were behind me knew what was necessary for the work, and had made provision for it on the inner planes, but I and I alone could draw it through into manifestation on the earth plane. In proportion as I could realize the powers at my disposal, I could use them. It was said by them of old time that the treasures of earth were in the keeping of the gnomes, the earth elementals, and that there were spells and words of power that could compel the spirits of elemental earth to surrender their treasures, and this is true, though not after the manner that the ignorant believe. There is a life of the earth soul, and gold is the blood in its veins and equates with that which on the subtle planes we call vital force. It is indeed the social equivalent of energy, and we exchange for it our energy of mind, body and estate and use it as the dominator thereof. It is possible to come to terms with the guardians of mineral life, and they will permit access to the unseen fountains of wealth in the earth soul, but this power is possessed only by high initiates to whom money, as money, means nothing, for in magic we can only work with power when free from desire. Desire defeats its own ends, for it is the parent of fear. So I, to whom poverty and wealth were all one, have resources placed at my disposal, and I used them to build my magical personality in the eyes of men and to make them see me as I wished to be seen. For the once born cannot look into the heart, and only a few of them can interpret the subtle workings of the mind. But one can suggest to them through the eyes what one wishes them to believe. This is better than suggestion given by the spoken word, for they discount that so heavily, being versed in the art themselves. I, for my part, knew how little the true adept needs for his magic, but I had to work upon men's imaginations, and for that I needed a stage setting. I had to make them see me as an adept or I should never have been an adept in their eyes. And to this end I had to have about me that which should suggest the great days of the past when the cult to which I belonged was at the height of its power, so that their thoughts being turned thereto, memories might be awakened and they might come onto my wavelength. And so, little by little, I had collected ancient things from the old temples, and these had to be kept in a dim light so that their magnetism might not be dispersed, but gather about them and pervade the atmosphere as incense pervades it. I also used colors for my background, knowing their power over my mind as well as over the minds of those who came to visit me. There is a science of colors, and we classify them in magic under the 10 stations of the heavens which are the 7 planets and space, their zodiac and the earth. There are also the 4 elemental kingdoms, but these are another matter. For my purpose I used the opalescent moon colors on a base of silver, the purple that is a plum color and the reds that are magenta or maroon, and the blues of seawater and the sky at night, never the strong primaries such as a man uses when he is a magus. Always the shadowy, blended colors are mine, for I am the shadow in the background. As for my body I had made that to be the instrument of my personality, training it, suppling it, learning its arts and its powers. Nature had not been unkind, but she had not been lavish, and I had to make of myself something that I could use for the purpose I had in hand.